Late Night Live, ideas and opinions from around the world.
And Elena's version of the Magic Carpet, a musical version, welcomes us to another Late Night Live. Those of us who thought that Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was a puppet of his boss, the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini, have been misinformed. Turns out that they're at daggers drawn, and it's a fascinating story we'll be exploring in just a moment. A little later I'll be introducing you to Herb Feith, another Australian connection with Vienna. God, we've been talking about Vienna a lot lately. In this case, he was an inspirational academic at Monash and an inspiring activist. And he helped form Australia's view of, or perceptions of Indonesia. For several months now, the Iranian president has been engaged in a bitter public feud with the senior clergy, including his boss, the Supreme Leader, and the dispute seems to be getting worse. Now, here's something, a tactic I've recommended to our beloved Prime Minister to deal with Her Majesty's opposition. Last month, more than 20 of Ahmadinejad's political associates were arrested, and wait for this, charged with witchcraft. Brilliant. This week, Ahmadinejad has surprised everybody by coming out against the Ayatollah's plans to introduce segregation of male and female students in Iran's university. So, you know, someone we regarded as extremely conservative is now emerging with progressive tendencies. Now, my next guest, who's been on the program a few times before, says that Ahmadinejad has been left politically isolated, and that the international community should prepare itself to say ta-ta, because unless he surrenders, he's not likely to survive in office to the end of his term in 2013. Meir Javed Anwar is director of the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Group, based in Tel Aviv, an Iranian Israeli, co-author of The Nuclear Sphinx of Tehran, Ahmadinejad and the State of Iran. And he joins us on The Blower from Colombia in South America, where it is 7 a.m. Mayor, thanks for getting up so early and welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be on your show again.
We first began hearing that there'd been a bit of a tiff in April when Ahmadinejad sacked his intelligence minister and the Ayatollah immediately overruled him, provoking a considerable public sulk. There's been no attempt to kiss and make up since?
There has been. Ayatollah Khamenei has now basically tried to improve the situation by telling members of Iran's parliament, the Majlis, to lay off the president and also to stop their attacks. Whether they will do that, that's another story. But he has basically tried to contain the situation. He's tried to basically to keep down the flames of the current dispute with the president. Whether he will succeed, it's up to President Ahmadinejad. If it's up to the Supreme Leader, he would want President Ahmadinejad just to keep his head down and do his work and finish his term in 2013. But knowing President Ahmadinejad's character, I don't think that's going to be likely.
Now, you're taking a quite different position from the arguments that we've been devouring in the last day or so. On the one side, there's the version of events which has Ahmadinejad with delusions of grandeur, wanting to take power away from the clerics. On the other side, that it's a bid by the Supreme Leader to destroy all factions, all political factions, rather than his own. In other words, a good old-fashioned purge. You think both of those views are too simple?
Absolutely. I don't think President Ahmadinejad is trying to challenge Ayatollah Khamenei's positions. He's trying to challenge some of his decisions. That's That's different than wanting to challenge the supreme leader's position. And Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is trying to make his mark as an Iranian president. He's not the first one. Mr. Khatami, his predecessor, tried to do the same. There's always been this kind of a struggle between the supreme leader and the president in terms of where the lines of authority are drawn. Many Iranian presidents have felt that sometimes the supreme leader has intervened in their what is their authority and their affairs. We shouldn't forget that Mr. Khamenei himself, who is now a supreme leader, was a president between 81 and 89, and there are some scenarios which they say he could have felt that his own power, he felt that his power was being challenged by Ayatollah Khomeini, the previous supreme leader. So in this case, what Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is doing that is different is that many thought that he's basically a lucky man, maybe that he's just basically a yes man, he's a lucky, he's not going to go this far because he knows that the only reason he's there is because of Ayatollah Khamenei's support. But now Ahmadinejad has surprised everybody. He's basically drawn the line and he's saying to Ayatollah Khamenei, yes, I will support you, but also there are, this support is also based on my conditions, and an important condition is that I get to keep my right-hand man, Isfandiar Rahim Ashai.
Now, let's talk about him. This is his chief of staff. I understand that Ahmadinejad is backing him to succeed him as president at the next elections in 2013, given that he's constitutionally prevented from standing again. Is it true that his protege has been promoting the slogan, Islam without the clerics?
He's been promoting the notion of Iranian Islam. This is what this is what's got the clerics really angry. He's basically put the word Iran before Islam, and this is something the clerics don't want to hear. Why? Because in 1979 there was a revolution, and Iran's name changed to the Islamic Republic of Iran. Just look at the title. Islam comes before Iran, meaning Islam takes precedence. So Islam is more important. But what he's saying now basically is bringing nationalism, infusing nationalism into Islam in Iran, and the clerics are very worried that, you know, if any more talk of this nationalism, then they could soon become redundant, because people could say, well, actually, okay, if we are now want a more nationalistic version of what we have, so we don't really need you. But there's another point I have to say here, Philip, is that the animosity towards him, there are other reasons. Some people say because he said that Meshai said that we don't have any problem with the people of Israel. Yes, this did make people angry, but here I think the main cause is growth jealousy. Many people are very jealous of this man, Meshai, who was an unknown. Ahmadinejad recruits him, and all of a sudden he's got unbelievable power, and I think people within the regime naturally are feeling very jealous of him, so they're attacking him.
As we've said, we thought Ahmadinejad was a creature of the Ayatollahs, a fundamentalist Shiite. Has he turned anti-clerical for some deeper reason, or is it just a response to the clerics turning against him?
Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has been very close to one cleric, at least, Ayatollah Mesbahiazi, who is a messianic cleric. His relationship with other clerics is not as close as Iran's other presidents. So, but you know, as the longer he stayed in power, the more distance he's become to them, because he belongs to a new generation of Iranian revolutionaries who believe that they were on the front lines of the revolution. They took part in the war, and meanwhile all the clerics in Qom were sitting in their nice air-conditioned offices studying the Quran. So they believe that they are more in touch with what the people of Iran need than the clerics. And the example you brought prior to the start of the show, when you said that Ahmadinejad is now going against the plans to segregate men and women at the university, the perfect example of that. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is also, he wants women to be able to watch football in Iranian stadiums. Now, you may say that's not very fundamentalist of him, you know, because people think that he's a fundamentalist. Well, Ahmadinejad is an Islamic. He's conservative. He's a religious man. However, there's a very important element in his life that's shaping his thoughts, and that's his wife. Mrs. Ahmadinejad has got a the big influence on his point of view regarding the position of women in Iranian society. And this is another place where his thinking is diverging from the clergy and adding to the differences between them.
You tell a fascinating story about Ahmadinejad boasting, this is during the election campaign that first got him elected, boasting about having been a former member of the Revolutionary Guard and taking part in frontline fighting. And it turns out that this was not exactly true.
That's correct. When I was co-authoring his biography, there was a site called Mardum Yar, which means the friend of the people. That was his main election site. It's been since taken down. And on that site, you know, his biography said that he belonged to the Revolutionary Guard and that he took part in special forces operations inside Iraq. Now, that biography is still now there in other blogs, the exact same biography. But since then, Ahmadinejad's own official biography has changed. He doesn't mention anything to do with the Revolutionary Guard. And in fact, he's the right-hand, his former right-hand man, somebody who's still in play, but he's not a senior, who knows Ahmadinejad since the start of the war, and said that basically Ahmadinejad was never a member of the Revolutionary Guard. So it looks like this is another case of resume fraud, which is we get that in many countries, and Iran is no exception.
We even get it in universities, don't we, Mae? So it's okay. Now, of course, the Revolutionary Guard are pretty important in this scenario because they've been put in charge of running elections.
Absolutely, and this is against Iran's constitution. Really, the Revolutionary Guard is not allowed to take part in politics, and this is where we see that the very fundamentals of the revolution are now being challenged, because the constitution that was drawn up after the revolution and which was also modified after Khomeini died, the year after Khomeini died in 1989, was a kind of a pillar of the legitimacy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, something that gave it a standing, a spine within the political establishment. But now it's basically being challenged by some of the decisions, and we see the Revolutionary Guard is now taking more of an active role in politics. And also, it's when there are fights in these kinds of regimes, the secrets come flowing out, the lips open, and people in a bit to hurt each other, they start spilling the beans, as you guys say in Australia. And one of the things that we hear now is that from Mr. Mohammad Khatami, the speaker, the Tehran Friday prayer leader, who basically said that in 2009 Ahmadinejad won because of Ayatollah Khamenei's support, and he's somebody who's very close to Ayatollah Khamenei. And what basically he's saying is that Ayatollah Khamenei went against the constitution because, according to Iran's constitution, the supreme leader cannot support a candidate. So we're living in very interesting times, and I think this is going to basically shape the identity of the Islamic Republic of Iran in the next 10 years, if it survives that long.
This is LNL on ABC Radio National, etc., and my guest is Mae Jevandanfar. Tell me about the few dozen of Ahmadinejad's associates being arrested and charged with witchcraft.
Yes, this is a fascinating story. There have been some associates of Mr. Meshai, who is close to President Ahmadinejad, who were accused of taking part in witchcraft, and they were arrested. There are, again, this is part of the going feud. You hear reports in Iran saying that some people are using that basically to further enhance their goals. And what is really concerning the government, apart from the political implications, is that according to reports from Iran, in order to, part of this process is calling up the devil. So what they do is they basically soil the Quran, and there have even been some reports about, using very unholy tactics, very dirty tactics to soil the Quran in order to bring up the anger of the Satan, in order to make him appear. And this is something that, of course, it's against Islam. It's very disrespectful to Islam. And also, this is something that's also a useful tool in order to clip the wings of Mr. Meshai. And if the reports are true, then basically he's given his opponents a very valid excuse to go after him.
Well, witchcraft's one tactic. The other is talk of possible impeachment of Ahmadinejad. On what grounds might an impeachment be launched?
Well, if the Majlis calls the president for questioning, it is possible that that could lead to impeachment of the president. The Majlis needs to. The Majlis can question the president, and is ultimately they could take part in the process of impeaching him. There were some plans to question President Ahmadinejad. However, now it looks like it's being challenged. Some of the people who signed the decree that was supposed to bring President Ahmadinejad for questioning are now basically withdrawing. Other people are saying that signatures have disappeared. The situation is very much in flux at the moment, but it is possible. I think if President Ahmadinejad continues with his policies, which are leading to infighting, if at any point Ayatollah Khamenei decides that this infighting is threatening the cohesion and the survival of the Islamic Republic, then I think it's very likely that he will use the Majlis in order to impeach President Ahmadinejad, because there's one thing and one thing only that the Supreme Leader of Iran is extremist about, and that is the survival of the Islamic Republic and his rule, the continuation of his rule as the Supreme Leader.
May a final question. How much popular support does Ahmadinejad have these days?
Very difficult to say, but whatever he had before is probably half now. So
I like that. Whatever he had before is half now. And, of course, there's an economic crisis, isn't there, to add to his unpopularity or his falling popularity?
Well, there's the economic crisis, but also it looks like Philip, he's a bit of a jinx himself. You know, whatever he touches turns to dust. Iran was playing a very important match 2 years ago, football. He turned up and it lost, basically, and people stopped told him not to turn up in football matches anymore. And also, he started denying the Holocaust, and because he's so unpopular, people became more interested in the Holocaust. So much so that some of his opponents accused him of being a closet Jew, and because he made the Holocaust so popular, he was taking part in some kind of a secret Jewish conspiracy theory to increase the population, to increase the education of Holocaust inside Iran. So, you know, Mr. Ahmadinejad himself is very much responsible for his own unpopularity. His economic policies are an important part, but also it seems that, you know, he doesn't have that magic touch, and actually the exact opposite.
We're going to have you on every week. That's been one of the most enjoyable political stories we've had for ages. Thank you very much, Mayor General Javandanfar, who, let me look at the credits here, let me get this right. Mayor is Director of the Middle East Economic and Political Analysis Group based in Tel Aviv, and of course he's co-author of The Nuclear Sphinx of Tehran, LNL, ABC Radio National, Radio Australia, etc. And after a little bit of music, we're moving across the planet to look at Australia's relations with Indonesia.